Hey everyone, my name is Jack Williams and I am here with
Essen Kasson.
And welcome to another episode of the Knoll Sports Podcast, episode 2 on the year. Essen, how are we feeling so far?
Feeling good. You know, I think the podcast went well last week. We had some good conversation, got it back rolling, got some good views, good feedback. So we want to bring you guys more content now.
Yeah, we're going to do a little bit more different content, exclusive content, be a little bit more in-depth and talk about Florida State athletics as a whole. As you saw on Seminole Script, or you can see on Seminole Script, that's kind of our weekly breakdown. Solely focused on football. We'll talk about football here a lot too, but we'll talk about soccer here. We'll talk about basketball. We'll talk about a little bit about baseball as well. We'll cover a lot about athletics too, but you can find all different content in between the two as well. But we'll jump into it right now. We're going to be talking about midseason grades with the football team right now. If you want to kind of follow along with us as we do this, Essen wrote a story, grading Florida State football, how the Seminoles grade after the first half of the 2023 season. We are just over the midway point of the season right now. Essen, do you want to lead us off? Tell us about your grades that you gave on the football team.
Yeah, so, you know, we start off with it's a 12-game season, and, you know, so we're 6 games in, Florida State 6-0. Accomplished what they want to do. I talked a little about that, you know, mentioned, yes, the results have been there, and we've talked to coaches who've said this as well, so it's not just us saying this to, like, you know, nitpick Florida State. This is what we're hearing from coaches, what we see at practice. These grades are indicative of what we see at practice. It has nothing to do with where they were 3 years ago. We don't care about that. This is this season only, what we see, and our grades are based off that. I consulted Jack with these grades before I put them up, so Jack, while it's not his grades, he did know the grades and he knows what the process into them. I think he agreed for the most part, right?
Yeah, I mean,
if there's any disagreement, the grades
can go on. Like Essen said too, this isn't just me and him just you know, spewing out whatever comes out of our mouths and stuff like this. This is what coaches are telling us, and you know, we talk to coaches, you know, we get the coordinators and Norvell once. We get the coordinators with Norvell once every week, and then we see Norvell probably 3-4 times after that a week, and then we get
the players as well.
Yeah, and we get the players as well. We get all varying perspectives that go into these grades as well. So it's not just what comes off the top of our head is how we're grading this and what our thoughts are as well. And I agree with Essen pretty much the entire story all the way down. But we'll get into the grades now. Essen, you gave offense a B starting off on my agree as well. You a little bit of commentary on you know, what went into your grade?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the offense, this might seem like a nitpick for an offense that scored 30 points in 12 straight games, and you know, averaging, they're 7th in the nation with 42.2 points. Like, it sounds like a nitpick, but we have seen the offense during practice. We have seen it in against Southern Miss. We've seen it, like, the flashes of it. They've left points on the board, like, every game, it seems like. There's a missed assignment, a missed pass, or a, you know, an errant pass from Jordan Travis, who he admits he's harder on himself than anyone else, you know? So there's been things that the offense can take another step. They can be better. And I know you agree with this, is that you have Keon Cole and Johnny Wilson. We haven't seen any of the other wide receivers take off yet. Trey Benson, the last two games, has really started running well. You know, Lawrence Toe-Philly had his best game of the year last week. Rodney Hill didn't play last week, but he's been coming along slowly. So there's another level this offense can reach. And Jordan Travis laughed when he said this. He's like, it's scary. We don't know. We have not played our best on offense yet, which is scary. It should be scary for us.
Oh, yeah, football. Absolutely.
They are averaging 42 points a game and have not played their best yet. Think about that. Like,
Essen's completely correct. I mean, you're seeing the highlight reel plays from Keon Coleman every week. Jordan Travis, you know, is doing what he's doing in the passing game as well, and getting the ball off to Johnny Wilson, stuff like that. And then Trey Benson continues to just pound away at that rushing effort constantly. And then we have to talk about what the tight ends have been doing as well, too. I mean, in my opinion, if there's any group on offense that's really, in my opinion, overperforming, it's the tight ends, because they've been asked so much, you know, when the running game was struggling to get going, and even when some of the wide receivers are out, whether if it was Keon getting shut down in the game, or Johnny was getting shut down in the game, or it was Johnny was out last week, you saw those tight ends really stepping up, whether it was Kyle Morlock or Jaheim Bell or Marquiston Douglas or Preston Daniel even too. You've been seeing them. They've just had a constant all around role as well. That's a group that has really had to step up. But as Essen mentioned, you really haven't hasn't been expansive beyond that. We haven't really seen anyone outside of Johnny and Keon really pop off. You know, you could talk about how LT is finding his game a little bit more, and then that Rodney Hill is getting involved a little bit more. But at the same time, like, it's a lot of Trey Benson on the rushing game. You can even argue it might be, you could argue that Jordan Travis might be second or third in rushing on the team right now, considering what he's doing too. But like, the offense, in my opinion, too, just does. It's doing a great job by absolutely, and SM agrees with that too. It's just the points that they're putting up as well, but it just needs to be a little bit more expansive. And the coaches and the players, as you said, agree on that. That, no, like you said, Jordan Travis was like, we are having, our offense is not playing up to 100% yet. And I think that's still something FSU needs to tap into. They're playing well, but they could play better.
Definitely. And then, you know, one thing, we've gotten emails about this the past 2 weeks, we'll bring it up, that, you know, people saying, like, you know, they play turnover-free ball, which is fantastic. I do agree that their turnover-free ball is, but I do think it's fantastic. 3 straight games without a turnover. What that tells me is, one of my friends, we joke about it, it's a turnover fairy.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to come and give it. It's going to take it. Turnovers are very much luck and luck based. Like, you know, Jordan Travis had a few balls that should have been picked off this year. He'll be the first to admit that. You know, same thing with fumbles. Like, there's been a couple times the balls hit the ground, but it's bounced Florida State's way. So when you, yes, not having a tournament 3 straight games is, you're putting yourself in the best possible situation. But I think Florida State's kind of been lucky in that aspect as well. So that, we'll get to that later, but that's going to be a key to the game for against Duke, is do not turn the ball over, because they are a ball-hawking team that can turn the ball over. But just grades-wise, yes, they deserve credit for not turning the ball over, but I'm weary of that because I think it's a luck thing. I think it's a thing, like, you know, aggression thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm weary of that. I know people are telling us to put ink about that,
mm-hmm.
but the thing is, that's more luck than it is talent.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Turnovers, I mean, it's just, I mean, it's honestly a, you could argue it's a blip in the play. Like, it's just, yeah, it's just about being at the right place at the right time too, and picking them up. And then, you know, it's just about, it's kind of just executing in the moment, honestly. It's a momentary type of thing as well, as you mentioned.
And that's actually a great transition to go to defense, which,
yeah, exactly.
I actually also gave a B, because talking about turnovers and, like, you know, luck, this was like Kalen Dillard putting himself in a great position with that sack at Clemson. He sacked him, picked up the ball. The ball bounced right to him. He took it for a score. So since that time, it's kind of funny. Since that time, Florida State, they did not allow another point to Clemson that game. They allowed, 10 points of Virginia Tech on defense. They had a the kickoff return.
Mm-hmm.
And then since then, that point, Florida State's defense has allowed 13 offensive points in 9 quarters.
Mm-hmm.
So the defense gets a B, but if you want to break it down to like the last 3 games, they get an A. But the start of the season with the defense was a major question mark. So it's overall body of work. We go with the B right now. They are improving. They are showing their potential. All the questions about Adam Fuller and, you know, it's hilarious. Once one thing goes wrong, fire Adam Fuller.
Yeah.
Everything's back to normal. Oh, yeah, Adam Fuller's a good coach. Like, guys, make up your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Fuller is a good coach. I think it's one thing he mentioned earlier this year is 2023 college football, it's hard to not give up points. The game is set up to give up points. The game is set up that you're going to, you know, give up touchdowns. You're going to give up points. You're going to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just the way it's set up. But, yeah. What are your thoughts? You know, B grade, what do you think?
I mean, like, looking at it the first time, I remember I was kind of weary because I was like, I don't know if the defense deserves a B. But then you think about how the defense has been playing, you know, from the beginning of the season to now. They're playing really well right now, I'd argue. But in the beginning of the year, especially against, you know, games like Boston College, you know, there's some games where the opponent was a little too close.
Clemson.
For what,
Clemson, yeah,
for
the first half, they dominated.
Oh, yeah, I know. For what Florida State is and what they're supposed to be and what they're hyped up to be, it didn't look like the defense was performing. I feel like now, and we're really going to see it when Duke comes up, that's going to be really one of the bigger tests. But it wasn't where it should have been, and now I feel like it is where it's at right now, which I think pulls that grade up to a B, as much as people might not want to hear it. But I mean, This is a group, in my opinion, too, with the defense, that you have a lot of depth here, and I think it's finally starting to, you know, finally starting to find its rhythm and its beat and really try becoming the beast that it is. I still think that we still need to see a little bit more from the defensive backs in the secondary. I mean, there really hasn't been someone that's really emerged from that. You could argue that there's, you know, a couple of guys back there that have really shown out, but there isn't anybody like, you know, there isn't like a Jared Verse who is dominating on defensive end. There isn't anybody like Kalen DeLoach at linebacker who's really like taken over that position as well too. Also got to talk about at linebackers. Well, this was a position that had a lot of questions coming into it, and it's been basically, in my opinion, it's been the most explosive position on defense, in my opinion. Just what we saw, what Kalen DeLoach did against Clemson, and just it's just been very intense, and just them being able to stop any sort of passing plays that have been going on and disrupt everything. But the defense, in my opinion, it's coming up and stuff like that. I think this has potential to reach an A by the end of the season. I think the defense is playing really well, but I think the B grade works because of where it was earlier this year.
No, I mean, one player I think we talked a little about, I want to talk a little about two things. Fentrell Cyprus, transfer from Virginia. First few games, he was fine. He was okay. He was good, you know. He's really come on lately where he's played a lot better. In my PFF story this week, which I had up, Cyprus had his best game. He was targeted 8 times this game, gave up 3 receptions for 38 yards, had 2 pass breakups, and finished with a NFL passer rating of 53.1 per PFF. So he had a really good game. He looked the part of the number one shutdown corner that they wanted out of the transfer portal. So if he keeps emerging, that's a Jared Verse in the secondary, you know?
Yeah. He's the
playmaker.
That's the player that could really own that position.
Vance had an interception. Jerrion Jones has been solid.
We've seen Kevin Knowles have really good practices and stuff like that. I think he just needs to transition that a little bit over to the game as well. But
and then the other thing I'm going to talk about, third down defense. Just think about this, okay? Florida State right now, teams are 28 of 88 against third downs against Florida State, which is 32%. That ranks 18th in the nation, 4th in the ACC. There was a stretch of 2 games where they went 18 of 33. Opponents went 18 of 33 against Florida State, 55%, which was ranked 129th out of 130th in college football. That's like Florida-esque last year.
Mm-hmm.
So take out, like, I just did the math. Take out the 2-game struggle. And obviously, the quality of opponent goes way down.
Oh,
so
yes.
A grain of salt. Southern, one is LSU, but you deserve credit for that one. But
yeah.
Southern Miss, Virginia Tech, and Syracuse are not world beaters in offense. So
right.
You take some points off for that, but still, 18% conversion rate on third down against Florida State's defense when you factor those opponents in. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we'll get into it later again when, you know, I'm bringing up Duke again, but.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the best team to play.
No, we're going to really get a lot of answers and clarification in this next game coming up against Duke. I mean, it's honestly interesting because this is really kind of the I'm trying to think of a word of it, kind of the peak opponent in this stretch for Florida State, because you start with ever since that Clemson game, which you could argue too about Clemson as well as a team that's hitting outside the top 25, still not ranked. But then you went from Virginia Tech to Syracuse, then you go up to Duke. And don't go up to Duke, but Duke is your next opponent, and then all of a sudden it's back down to, you know, Wake Forest and then Pitt, and then
which Pitt could be like we're looking ahead a little bit, but Pitt could be interesting because they just knocked off Louisville. Like, it makes nothing.
You could argue, and it's a road game, and we haven't Florida State in the road games that they've had this year haven't looked great. You know, there was the almost collapse against, you know, Boston College, and then. There was the, you know, granted Clemson's its own environment, stuff like that, but still
that was the best college environment.
It was still an extremely tight game. I would not count LSU as a away game. It was a neutral site game. It was pretty much a home game for FSU. But we'll really see what FSU looks like on the road coming up as well, and if Wake Forest and Pitt will be a problem. And then at the end of the season, there's Florida there.
That's the toughest game on the schedule. And Florida, like, you know, what's up? Well, we'll get back to the grades in a second, but yeah, Florida is going to be a tougher than expected game. Graham Mertz has been better than expected. Florida's 5-2 with an impressive win at South Carolina last week, comeback win. But defense, anything else you want to add?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it. We'll jump into your only A that you gave. I agree.
Spoiler.
I mean, this special teams unit, which is what got an A. It's just been they've just done their job all around. You can argue that you got to give credit, so much credit to Ryan Fitzgerald, and just from what the year he had last year to now. And then you have to just talk about your job and doing just going above and beyond. You have to talk about what Alex Mastromano has been doing at the punting game. I just gave you two names out there are doing a fantastic job. You can pick who you want to touch on first, whether it's Ryan or Alex.
Yeah, no, let's talk about Ryan first.
Okay.
7 of 7 this year, 2 field goals from 48 yards out.
Mm.
You know, he's perfect on all 39 attempts this year, which is notable because he went 12. He didn't miss any extra points last year, but he went 12 of 20 on kicks last year. It was a major struggle. There was at points, like, you know, you saw Norvell 4th and 6, 4th and 7, longer distance. It was like, all right, we're just going to keep the offense out here. Mm-hmm. Now, by nature, Norvell's a more aggressive coach, which we've seen.
Yeah.
Which he went for twice on 4th down in Syracuse territory, which I know people were mad about that. I didn't agree with the play call, but I think they were the right decisions to call each time. You know, you don't get cute. Yes, Jaheim Bell is really talented, but Jordan Travis is the guy who had the ball. But that's besides
right,
the point.
Right.
Let's get back to special team. But yeah. So 48-yard field goal against Clemson, he trusted him. 48-yard field goal against Syracuse, there was a lot less at stake, and there was, you know, it was fine. But that's, like, once again, it was Syracuse, so he could easily be like, you know what, let's give the offense a shot. No, he's like, no, I have faith in my kicker, I'm sending him out, let him kick it, and he proved them right. 7 of 7 this year. I know earlier in the year people were questioning, like, oh, he's kicking everything below 30 yards. Not a big deal. Well, there you go. There's your answer. Ryan Fitzgerald.
You got the answer.
Ryan Fitzgerald is legit. and it's good for him. You know, I saw a kid last year who was struggling with his confidence. Like, kicking is a very, very mental game where you have teammates, but you're kind of by yourself and in your own head. So good for him. We go back to Alex Mastromano, who is averaging 47.6 yards per punt this season, which would break the previous record by Sean Powell. So he's been great. You know, they don't have they had a kickoff return against them, which we knocked for, you know, which is why it's not an A+.
Yeah.
This could have been A+. Like you know, they had a kickoff return against them. They've had a few penalties called them. Keon Coleman's had a kickoff return. So I think overall in this group, the reason I gave him an A is I think that good really, really outweighs the bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not close. Like, the defense and offense, I think it's a little closer. Special teams, this has been, like, you know, Mike Norvell has harped on this at Memphis. He's harped on it here now. And this is the best the special teams has looked under him. And it's only getting better.
Yeah, and I honestly think it's just in college football and in fans, just in my view in college football, but just football on every level, I think people will always be extremely hard on the special teams because I think it's a common thought that people think they don't do much considering that it's special, so they're not out there as much. But I mean, this has been a unit, and SNS said, as they mentioned, he docked accordingly about the kickoff return from Virginia Tech for the touchdown. It's honestly one blip in the whole thing. I mean, when you're talking about your field goal kicker, you're talking about Ryan, who's made just about everything, and you talk about Alex Mastromano, who is the top, I believe he's the top punter in the ACC right now.
I believe so. I double checked.
If not top three.
But yeah, he's definitely one of the top ones. We can definitely say that with the, you know.
Oh, he's in that mix in the national rankings as well too. When you're talking about a guy that is averaging half a football field on punt return,
he's changing the field every time he kicks the ball.
He is, and then you talk about, you know, too, one of the honestly the most athletic weapon they have on this roster, Keon Coleman, who mentioned in the press conference prior to this when he's at Michigan State, he didn't return punts. This wasn't a thing he did. This was the thing he started here at Florida State.
He didn't name him by name, but we'll drop his name in here. Jaden Reed, wide receiver, Green Bay Packers. He's in the NFL, so I know my friend here, Jack, is not a Packers fan at all.
No, I was born and raised around Chicago, but anyway.
So it hurts him to bring up a Packers.
Much respect for any college player that's able to go up into the NFL and continue their game up there, absolutely.
But yeah, so he was behind Jaden Reed, who did not return a punt for a kick last year, touchdown last year, but had, I think, 3 the year before. So extremely talented, super short in that. So I'm sure Keon Coleman picked up some stuff from him.
Yeah.
Because he's bringing it over here, and he's gonna break one next soon.
Oh no! He is banging on that door for just, you know, taking one right to the house and stuff like that. It's gonna be interesting if they're gonna be able to do this against Duke or not too, because this is a special teams unit that is also very successful as well. Again, we'll hold off on that for now. I know there's a lot of implications coming up in this Duke game, but anyway, the special teams just been playing just extremely well, in my opinion. I think an A is warranted. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, this is actually a smooth transition again, because on special teams, if Keon does return one, we're going to see Mike Norvell probably running with him, which he joked about.
Absolutely.
Which brings us to coaching.
Yeah. I think it was your one minus grade in here. Coaching got a B minus. S and K. I think people might have some opinions about that, just seeing a minus attached to it. But you know, minus aren't always bad. It's still a B. But anyway, S and take us through your grade.
Yeah, I mean, so we go back to, like, you know, the offense and defense. They're Bs because of lack of execution from players at different times. But I think you can put that in the coaches as well. So when you have two units that are just Bs, I could give the coaching staff a B, but I give a B minus because I think there's some decisions. We talk about play calling. Like, people are getting mad at me, like, you know, for the B minus. I've already gotten some comments like, how can you be that low? But B minus, play calling has been questionable at times. It's been vanilla at times. I think there's better play calling, the better plays they have for the personnel they have. The defense has not been aggressive all the time. They've been more aggressive the past few games. So overall, the offense and defense, like, when you mix all that in, the coaching staff gets knocked a little bit because guess who's in charge of these players? Guess who's giving these players plays on the field? So, yes, you can blame the execution, but as Atkins pointed out and we talked about a little bit earlier, is that this is a process-oriented thing. And if you ask Mike Norvell, he'll be the first one to tell. He might even give himself a C. Like,
yeah.
Honestly, if you ask Mike Norvell today, what grade would you give yourself as a coach for this year? He'd probably say C, C plus. Just that's how he is. So we're going to judge him in the same way. We're not going to be like, you know, it's going to be like, you know, there's Florida State had two turnovers on downs inside the Syracuse territory last week. And settled for a field goal inside the Syracuse 5. That's major points left on the board.
You know, as you mentioned too, that it's good that this coaching staff is, you know, critical of its own self, as we've seen from, you know, Atkins talking about the missed assignments and Norvell talking about the missed assignments and stuff like that too. Fuller breaking down what went wrong against Boston College and stuff like that. Like, they're 6-0 right now. They could easily be a staff be like, well, everything's going great right now, and we don't need to talk about it. This is a staff that has been very, you know, at the same time, they don't want to get, you know, so infatuated and so, you know, into the whole, we're 6-0 right now, everything's going perfect. They want to break things down as well, too. And I agree with us, and too, with the coaching as well, too. It's, you know, sometimes they've been a little bit reserved in what they do. And, you know, in my opinion, there's something I wanted to bring up with the offense as well, but it just kind of skipped my mind until I remembered it now. We haven't really seen the explosive and, you know, the type of Jordan Travis that we had seen last year. You know, he's doing his job and stuff like that, and he's passing the ball and he's completing. You know, he's doing enough to win, but we haven't seen, you know, those crazy Houdini plays from Jordan Travis this year as well. I think, and like they said, they don't feel like the offense is playing up to its standard just yet.
No, like, we talk about they're not sustaining drives. Going back to offense, because this goes hand in hand. The FSU's offense is averaging 65.3 plays per game this year, 101st in the nation. Last year, they were averaging 70.6 plays per game, which is 60th in the nation. That might not seem like a lot, but that is a lot. That's chances, like, you know, especially when you have, like, and I'm going to get to the next stat I had in here. Florida State's offense is not hitting explosive plays either, which could be because of lack of opportunities. But last year, they were second in the nation with 97 plays of 20 yards or more. This year, they're tied for 34th with 34. Although they have 20 in the past two games alone. So it's starting to come along. It's looking a little better. But once again, quality of opponent doesn't matter as well. So, but still, the offense is capable of more, the defense is capable of more. Papuchis, if we're just grading individual coaches, probably gets an A, you know?
Yeah, I mean, no, he's doing his job, absolutely, with the special teams.
So, but yeah, Norvell, if we're going to break it down like a little further, B, B minus, and C plus.
For who gets the C plus?
Sorry, C plus for Norvell. B minus for Fuller, B for Atkins, and then A for Papuchis.
Yeah, that weighs out pretty well. And then we'll get to your final overall grade that you had over here for the team, which was a B, which makes sense. I think looking forward, and, you know, this is kind of like the midterm and then the finals at the end of the season, but I feel like I feel like an A is achievable for this group. I think they're starting to hit their stride a little bit more, as you mentioned, quality of opponents, however, these last few games. But I mean, if they continue to play a consistent game the same way they played Syracuse as they do against Duke and then so on, I feel like we can see a second half of the season where Florida State really turns into that dominant power. I mean, they are undefeated, but I mean, we can really see them turn into a dominant team.
I mean, this is a team that's capable of scoring, let's say, 56 points a game, mm-hmm. and holding opponents to like 10 or less every game. If they really found their groove, and they're capable of doing that. So
yeah,
that's crazy to say in college football these days, but that's how good this team could be. The potential is. But yeah, let's you want to move it like so.
Well, I mean, moving into it, I mean, if you want to call it kind of a if you want to call it kind of a test, pop quiz, not really a pop quiz because I'm preparing for it, but the test coming after this midterm is Duke. I mean,
one counts for 30% of your grade for the semester.
quite literally will. Duke ranks as the 16th best total defense in the country, their fourth best scoring defense in the country, second best red zone nationally. You talk about Riley Leonard, and then we'll talk about if he's going to play or not, but I mean, this is a team that it's bringing a lot to the table. You could argue, and I know fans will argue, Duke doesn't have the college football. You want to talk about college basketball, it's all over the place, but they don't have the name notoriety this year like LSU and Clemson did. But at the same time, in my opinion, this is the biggest challenge FSU will face this year so far in just this defense it's going to place. And depending on whether or not Riley Leonard comes in this game, this could be a whole complete game that FSU will get challenged top to bottom in.
Yes, I mean, Florida State has not played a complete game 4 quarters since they played 5 quarters in that game against Clemson.
Yeah.
You know? Uh-huh. So that was almost a month ago, I believe. So this can be the first time they really be pushed. So that's going to be interesting, guys. It's going to be a fun game. I'm looking forward to it. Especially, I really hope Brandon Leonard plays because I want to see Florida State tested. I want to see the best possible game played at primetime ABC game.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a fun game. You know, Riley Leonard's talented, like I mentioned earlier. He's second in the team in rushing, has done for a good amount of yards this year, is a very talented player.
Yeah, and I think this could be a game that's going to really shove the offense to expand a little bit more. As we mentioned before, you know, it's kind of been, you know, Johnny Wilson and Keon Coleman at wide receiver, and it's been Trey Benson kind of at running back. But I feel like this kind of game with the defense that's coming forward with Duke will kind of force FSU that we need to explore every option here. And granted, against Syracuse, we did see a lot of guys get action and be a part of the final result there. But against Duke, you're not only going to need those guys not just to be putting involved and saying, yeah, I got in the field and I recorded 10 rushing yards or 10 yards on reception, but you're going to need the guys to produce, find the end zone. Because what happens when you have Duke players double-teaming Johnny and Keon, and they're eliminated from the game in that situation as well. And then, you know, we've had this the whole conversation throughout the year, too, of whether, you know, they'll double-team Keon or they'll double-team Johnny. But one gets open, and that was kind of what we're seeing at the beginning of the year, and now it's kind of expanded to both of them. But, talking about how good this Duke defense, I mean, we might need to see, you know, someone else at wide receiver pop up as well. I mean, this is a very, very dangerous defense that they will be
definitely cannot turn the ball over like we talked about earlier, which is partly luck, you know. Got to hope the luck fairies down your side. Got to, just play your best game overall. There's going to be no slacking off this game because, as Jordan Travis mentioned, they don't miss assignments. They're going to be all over the place. They're going to hit you. And the other side of the ball, you know, we have Leonard. His stats, 62% of his passes completed, 912 yards,
mm-hmm.
3 touchdowns, 1 interception. So that doesn't look great on paper, but you have to remember Notre Dame, Clemson on the schedule. So.
Right.
But he's also the second leading rusher with 47 rushes, 345 yards, 4 touchdowns. So dual threat in every sense of the way is going to test the FSU's defense because they struggled against running quarterbacks in the past. And he's not one of those quarterbacks like, you know, where you take away his running game. He can pass the ball through. So he's a dual threat in every sense. He's going to be a threat against us in this game if he plays.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't play, we have his backup, Henry Bielen, the fourth. He's very talented. Like, he's impressive, 6'3", 210 pounds.
Yeah.
like we talked about earlier, 4-for-12 passing, 107 yards, 2 touchdowns, and an interception against NC State last week. So limited sample size.
Well, the question I have too is, if Bielan comes into the game, is FSU's goal going to be to force them to pass the ball from then on out? I mean, after only attempting 12 passes against at NC State last week.
So that'd be interesting, because like the way Mike Elko talked, and that could just be coach speaking about his players, because you know that's how that is. But they sound confident that the offense could be opened up with him. They don't, like, I think once again that was NC State. They jumped ahead. They knew their defense is going to do the job. They're not going to open the playbook. It's going to be very vanilla. They're not going to do anything ahead of Florida State. So I think, yes, you could look at that tape and see what his tendencies are, what he does. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that tape's going to tell you much what they're going to do against Florida State.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's going to be an entertaining game no matter what. As SM mentioned, I agree with him too, that I'm hoping to see that Riley Leonard will come back, because that will just make the game exciting, more exciting than it's already going to be. And I'm very interested about how FSU's offense is going to attack this defense, because this is going to be the biggest, I've said it like 5 times in this podcast already, but this will be the biggest challenge that they will face this year on defense.
All right, predictions.
Predictions. I'm trying to remember what I said earlier. Yeah, I think this is going to be a close game either way. I do think the FSU offense is going to be able to pull it out here, and I think they're going to get a little boost from their kicker. I think Ryan Fitzgerald is going to stay perfect on the year. I have a 31-21 result in favor of the Seminoles.
All right. So I think I have a close game as well. I think the line opened at 14 points, but I think if Leonard does not play, and I'm going with the assumption he's playing, because uh-huh. That's what FSU is going with.
Right, well, that's what I'm on too.
Yeah. I'm going 27-20, Florida State wins.
Okay.
It's been a close game throughout. Florida State wins. It's going to be leading throughout, but it's going to be close. They're never going to be able to pull away from Duke. Mm. The Blue Devils are going to be there the entire time, so I think it's going to be a close game.
Is FSU missing the extra point, or are they missing the 2-point conversion?
No, it's going to be 2 field goals and...
2 field goals. Okay, yeah. The math is always very interesting on these predictions. Yeah. You can get there in so many different ways.
3 touchdowns and 2 field goals.
Yeah, exactly. How many safeties?
None.
Okay.
All right.
But yeah, we'll switch gears now.
Soccer.
Talk about soccer. Soccer, number one team in the country right now. I mean, we really saw them look like the number one team in the country.
Oh, against, man, that was impressive against Notre Dame.
Against the number 11 team in the country as well. I mean, there's... just the way they're able to just – it looks like they're playing chess out there, honestly. The way they organize the field and the way they set things up and the way they're just able to attack and run. I'm about to talk about a player that even scored that night. And just the speed she has, her field ability, the way she's able just to find the ball and get all these opportunities. I mean, Jordan Dudley, I will say this completely. She's the top freshman in the country right now. Just the way she's able to create chances, how fast she is. That was the big thing. When you watch her just take off and run, she was so fast when she would get to these opportunities. I don't have her height right now off the top of my head, but the stride that she has, she's able to get downfield so quickly. And then the opportunity she had. She had a ton of opportunities against Notre Dame. The Notre Dame goaltender was all on top of her. But who made up for that was Oni Ejikini. Said it right that time,
yes.
Right? Yes, she scored 2 goals on the night. She is also tied with Jordan for goals on the team as well. They both have 8. I believe that is good enough for 4th in the ACC. Let me pull up it really quickly. I just wrote it down. 4th in the ACC. So they're getting their job done up there as well. Taylor Huff has been, you know, one of the bigger transfers they've really picked up from Tennessee. She's 4th in the ACC right now in assists. She has been a ace in the corner when it's come to dropping in those corner kicks and stuff like that. Jody Brown, believe she's plays for the Jamaican national team as well. And you gotta talk about the national team talent on this roster too. You have all different players that were over at the World Cup as well. Jody Brown had just come back too from playing against Canada for the Olympic qualifier, and then she came back and she's still producing constantly with Florida State as well. She's 4th in game winning goals. Taylor Huff is tied for first 2 with 3. Jody Brown has 2. Oh my god, I'm running out of saliva here as I keep talking. But and then points, Jordan Dudley's up there. Ejikini's up there as well. Taylor Hoff's up there. And then you got to give a shout out to Christina Roque as well. Roque and what she's doing too. I mean, she's ranks fourth in goals against average at 0.833, and she has 6 shutouts on the year as well. Soccer's just a very interesting sport because the stats are very spread out. But she's been Roque's just been doing a great job as well. This is a team that is just rolling right now. They played a fantastic game against Notre Dame, number 11 team in the country, number 12 this week. You talk about the other results they've had too. They tied Carolina on that stunner that happened in the final 3 seconds. One of the most electrifying goals I've seen in college soccer. They came back against 2-0 down against Clemson. Were able to come back and win that game 4-2. And they're getting, in my opinion, it's a big week for Florida State teams and getting challenges this weekend. I don't know if it's the biggest challenge they've seen this year, but it will be debatably in the top three. They're taking on a Pittsburgh team that this team knows how to score the ball so well. You have Amanda West, Sarah Shapensky, Samia Parihi. Excuse me, I'm mispronouncing these three names, but they are just dominant. They know how to get the ball in the net. They know how to score the ball, and they are going to be a huge offensive threat in this game, and it's going to push. It's going to really, really push this Florida State defense. It's going to be a battle. It's going to be a great game on Thursday against these two teams.
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, the talent both teams have. You have keys to the game. We'll get to that in a second, but this is a major game for ACC standings again, like just like Notre Dame was last week. If you look at the top of the standings, Florida State is 11-0-1, 6-0-1 in ACC. But Pittsburgh is 5-1-1, Clemson's 5-1-1, Notre Dame's 5-1-1. And then North Carolina is a little further back, 4-0-3. So, but they are alive because let's say somehow Pitt knocks off Florida State here. Pitt knocks off Florida State this week. You potentially have a 4-way tie for first place with UNC. Probably they win their match 1 point back. It's gonna be a jumbled mess. It's gonna change the the implications of Florida State can host or not for the ACC. It's gonna change if they're number one seed overall, where they're going to rank. So it's a must-win. I mean, every game is a must-win game when you have as few games Florida State has in their schedule this year.
Yeah, and I mean, this could be a chance. Again, as I mentioned, it's extremely tight, but this could be a chance for Florida State to inch by inch pull away.
I mean, I'm looking at, just trying to do the math quickly.
Yeah.
Florida State wins this one. They have 2 matches left. They have a 2-game lead on Pittsburgh, essentially the tiebreaker.
Mm.
Clemson, they beat them already. And Notre Dame, they beat, correct? Yes, they beat Notre Dame.
Everyone except for North Carolina, they've
beat. So they have a tie with UNC, which I think at that point, with 22 points with 2 games left, UNC's kind of, mathematically, I don't know how many ACC games they have left, but I'm guessing they would be mathematically out of it for winning it if Florida State wins this one. So they would eliminate UNC from the conversation of being, finishing winning ACC, which is a major thing always.
Yeah.
You have essentially a 2-game lead on Pitt, which means you need one more win. If and you have essentially, depending on what Clemson and Notre Dame do, you have a 1-game lead on them.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially a 2-game lead on them. Sorry, it would be a 3-game lead on Pitt, so Pitt would be eliminated as well, if you're looking at the math. With 2 losses, 2-game lead on Pitt, 3 games with the tiebreaker. Then you have a 1-game, maybe it counts as a 2-game lead on Pitt, on Clemson and Notre Dame. So you have a chance, really, This weekend to put the ACC away, where next Thursday you're just playing because for the number one seed and making sure you could probably just play some younger players and just get them in there, but you're playing for more postseason seeding than ACC state seeding because you already got locked up. They do their job this Thursday against Pittsburgh and Sunday against Duke. They could lock this up and not have to worry about,
Well, like Duke down the road, too.
Tiebreakers.
Yeah, and you have Duke coming up as well. That's another equation you don't want to fall into because if you lose to Pittsburgh, then you immediately have to go over to Duke, which is, I think that's UNC's only tie of the year. No, I'm sorry, that's Florida State, excuse me. It's one, I can't remember who it was, but Duke handed, someone, it was either a tie or a loss in the schedule. Duke is not a team to, but just laying it out there so I'm not falling over myself continuously, but Duke is a team that you don't want to sleep on, and this is going to be a very important stretch for Florida State. And as SM mentioned, they can easily just clean up business here. They could win at Pittsburgh, don't have to worry about Duke, could win out there and continue to pull away and lock up postseason seeding as well. Let's see what Duke did.
They tied
at UNC.
So they're coming along lately. They have only a 1-1 tie with Virginia, only a 2-1 loss to Pittsburgh at Pittsburgh. They tied UNC at home, and then they lost to number 7 Clemson 1-0. So they've played some tight contests.
1-0.
1-0.
Yeah. No, it's an exciting stretch for this team, and you know, they're taking it game by game as well too. But as you mentioned, you got to think about what's ahead in the postseason.
Definitely.
But we'll transition off of.
Well, you know, we're gonna wrap this up today. Okay. Next time we'll get some basketball for you guys, but we'll be at practice. Hopefully, for men's today, women's next week.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get some basketball content for you next week. Jack, where can they find us?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find us at Knoll Sports just about everywhere, whether it's on X/Twitter or it's on Facebook or on Instagram. All of that handle stays the same. You can find all of our content at Tallahassee.com. You can find our individual accounts on X/Twitter. Mine is at Jack G. Williams. S is SN Kasim. And then again, Noble Sports just about everywhere. But yeah, then we'll wrap it up today.
Thank you so much for joining us, and keep checking us out. Thank you.